Welcome to another episode of 115 Miles. Josh, did you enjoy today's chat?
Very much. I think that's one of the best chats we've had in a long time. We don't always say that on the intro. Just genuinely, yeah. I believe it was. It had everything in it.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about routine, structure, how to transition. Started with kind of how we were feeling, just very present in how we're feeling today. That was a good conversation. Then we went into exploring kind of the role that social media played in the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case, and we dove into a little bit around the impact on kind of women's rights and women's safety, and just in general, just you know, the danger of kind of social media and crowds. What did you think of that conversation?
I think it was, look, we probably looked at it in a way most other people are not looking at it. You know, we held space for the way that everybody saw it, from how, you know, men that may have been on the end of smear campaigns saw it, and how women that may have been in abusive relationships saw it. So we sort of tried our best to hold space for how everybody saw it. So I really hope people take a lot from this, and they can come and find us where, Hass?
115 Miles Pod on Instagram.
Come and get us, and we'll see you very soon. This is 115 Miles with Josh Connolly and Hassan Kaya. Growing up 115 miles apart, our lives couldn't have been more different. But we find ourselves today with many similarities and outlooks upon life. Join us on our podcast as we take a topical dive into life, work, culture, and everything in between.
No, I'm just kidding.
All right,
cool. Josh,
how are you, Hass?
I'm all right, mate. I'm really pleased to be back in the studio. It makes such a difference.
It does make a hell of a difference. Yeah. And we're at a table setting today, Hass.
At my insistence.
At your insistence. Even though when we turned up here, the poor man had just set the sofa up. Hass was like, no. Do you fucking know who I am? Change it.
I did say that. And it worked, didn't it?
And it worked. Yeah. So yeah, here we are. But it is, to be fair, it's much better. Particularly for what we're about.
Also, there's a nice area to keep our drinks.
Yeah, yeah. So we are sponsored by San Pellegrino.
And Feel Good.
Whose is better?
Mine's better for me.
Better branding. Which is better branding?
Yours is more established branding.
Okay.
But yours is full of sugar.
It's actually not this one, because I checked. So there's only 70 calories in it.
Well, there you go. I think there's a bit of work that they need to do, because whenever I pick those up, I think, oh, it's full of sugar. I'll go with a sugar-free version.
I thought the same and checked it this morning. That's because I wasn't going to get it, genuinely, for the same reason.
We are genuinely not sponsored by San Pellegrino, but go buy it because it tastes good and looks good in your
mind
hand.
You, those calories that are in there are probably sugar, right?
Yeah, a lot of sugar.
Good.
So, as he takes a swig of his sugar drink, give me a word that sums up how you're feeling today.
One word.
Oh, a set of words.
A word that sums up how I'm feeling. So there's a big part of me that's, I feel very, what can I say? Like, what would be a word that would cover energized? I feel energized and excited about what I'm doing from a career work perspective. I feel like everything's moving in the way that I want it to be. If you bring in my kind of personal life and what's going on in my personal life, there's some like heaviness going on there and a little bit of like trickiness and things that I need to navigate. So that's, so I recognize there's two kind of almost polar opposites going on in me.
Yeah. Yeah. And which is the dominant? Feels like the energized one feels more dominant in the space at the moment.
That's because I'm in London in my working head on, I'm in that space.
Yeah.
Which, so I guess it's important to understand that, isn't it? This is why I'm already digressing, but people try and do surveys within the working environment for like well-being. Mm. So they're like, we're doing all these surveys, and you have to be really, really careful with surveys because it, you know, if you're trying to get me to rate how I'm feeling from 1 to 10, there's so many different things that are going to influence that, you know, literally where I'm stood when you ask me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you think about the way that people respond, it's often also because they've put their sort of their mask on work. You know what I mean? Like, so they almost, many won't even be able to tap into what isn't going well in their life.
Or
the opposite, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And even like, if you get somebody like me to come in and do a session with people, right? There's going to be a load of people pleasers in there. So when they do the survey afterwards, they're only ever going to say it was good and made them feel better because they think that's what they're supposed to do.
Chris used to call, well, he still does that. He calls them happy sheets.
Yeah.
Because like, if you get, like, people don't like confrontation as well, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So if you give somebody and you've just spent, you know, 3 hours with them and you say, by the way, here's something that I want you to fill out. And by the way, I'm collecting them afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
People aren't just not going to be honest, right?
Some people will be, wouldn't they? But look, I wouldn't. I'd mark, you know, if it was out of five, I'd probably put 4 for everything and then walk out and tell you I think it was shit.
It's like checker trade, you know, like the checker trade is where you get people that come in and they do like plumbers or electricians or whatever, and they'll come and do work, and then they always want you to rate them because obviously it helps them.
Yeah.
But even if they haven't done something particularly well, you don't want to be the one that like is the asshole that publicly puts them down. I did that once. One guy turned up a bit late and everything else, he was good. And he only ever had 10 out of 10. But because he turned up late, I thought, oh, let me be honest. And I scored him down. And then Aaron just gave me so much shit for just like, the poor guy was stuck in traffic. What do you want him to do? And I've lived with that ever since. I felt like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
The opposite is also true. Do you know what I often try and do when we're going away and we have like a really good holiday or we stay somewhere or, I don't know, not restaurants, because I wouldn't go online and either way with a restaurant, but a holiday.
Yeah.
I always try and think to myself, it's been really good. I'm going to go on wherever it is and make sure I leave a really good review.
Yeah.
So that when I want to leave a bad review, because when you want to leave a bad review, you're way more motivated to do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I tend to, I can't remember the last time I left a review for anything.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
But if you go online, I feel like, you know, people are more motivated if they're pissed off with a product and they want to go and leave a bad review.
I think I think it's something like this ratio. For every, if a person gets a piece of like good service, they'll only tell one person. If they get bad service, they'll tell 10 people. That's how we're wired.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It makes
wired
sense.
To kind of, you know, respond to bad service.
Yeah.
There are some people that just enjoy kind of
being pricks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's say it as it is.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've said it. I don't need to say it now. But yeah, so, okay. So basically, depending on where you are, right now you're in London and feeling kind of the energy, but then there's sort of, you know, other feelings at play as well.
Yeah.
I would say that I guess the word to sum up how I'm feeling is motivated.
Yeah.
We've been working behind the scenes at Mavericks to try and sort of move me more towards the kind of the digital side of the business. And that is quite a significant thing because I'm so involved in the other side of the business.
Yeah.
So in many ways, it means my time is going to be, you know, utilized differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really motivated to make it count because otherwise I could end up just basically, you know, not doing what I'm supposed to be and just procrastinating. So I'm really motivated. And I think definitely looking at what you've been up to over the last few weeks and months and just the energy and like the traction and kind of the movement, I think is motivating me to kind of get really focused. One thing I know about myself is I've got lots of strengths, you know, that energize me, and then I've got things that drain me. And one of the things that drains me is efficiency.
Yeah.
So I love procrastinating, but I think procrastinating leads to my creativity.
Yeah.
But efficiency is like getting things done in the most, you know, efficient way.
Yeah.
And I'm drained by it. So like focused work drains me, like it takes energy away from me. So I have to be conscious of that. Because I think if I don't kind of address it, then what will happen is I'll just get like more and more, you know, behind where I want to be. So I think that's something I'm going to look at. And then the other thing that I've just come off of some really quality present time with the family, and we talk about this a lot. And family is obviously a big part of our lives. We talk about it a lot on this podcast. We also talk about the fact that we need to be more present, or I certainly do. And I think just, you know, being there, being with the family, we were at Wembley, we were at a concert on Sunday, and it was just, you know, for me, it was so such connected time. Mm. That's really, really important. So it's not a word, but like, you know, being more present is something that I just really want to like get serious around. I think just one point, I know that if I just sort of do the, I just need to be more present, that's not going to happen. I have to put the habits in place.
Yeah, yeah. You're very systems and habits based, aren't you? I always use you as an example of someone that's like quite, I'm a bit more, I work better if I allow myself to be a little bit tangled and go, right, I'm here in this space, here's an opportunity to be present, use it. So I have some routine stuff that I have to function with, but I have to, I'm to a little bit more.
I disagree with that. I mean, I know you know yourself, but I think where I see you seem to make a lot of progress on this is actually there are set times where you and your wife have to be in certain places.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas mine's a bit more, my sort of situation's a bit more fluid. Whereas, so the way that you wake up and do your exercise, then wife does, you know, what she needs to do. And, and you've got to be in certain places. And that's even more complicated now that you've had, more things to contend with, right?
More children living with
More kids coming into the household.
Right, yeah.
You have to be really, really deliberate with how you're spending your time. Therefore, it's just for you, it's almost like there's no choice. You have to be in that place at that time doing that thing. And I think I'm probably a bit more freewheeling than that. And I need to be a bit more like, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, you make a good point. I mean, look, when I get up and do the exercise in the morning, like that's like my bread and butter, if you know what I mean. That's like, you know, if I don't, I'm drowning for the day. Yeah. It is literally like that for me, right? If I do 2 or 3 days without working out in the morning. So like the working out, getting up early in the morning to do that, anyone can do that. Like my structure of my whole day has changed, you know. I will only ever watch an hour of TV at night unless football's on, and then it's 90 minutes, right? I will very, very rarely watch 2 hours because I know if I do, I need to get up at 5 and my next day will be a nightmare because I'll be tired, right? So there's that aspect of it. But what you say is true because Tuesdays and Wednesdays now, I don't necessarily have to be home, right? I have to be home normally on a Monday and a Thursday, yeah? Tuesday and a Wednesday, and I don't. And so my time on a Tuesday and Wednesday with my children, I see that already. That's quite a relatively new thing. I see already me squeezing the hell out of Tuesdays and Wednesdays nights and being less present and less at home with my kids, right? So that structure's been removed, and I see there now I fall into that thing of doing it. So I guess in some ways, like making sure that you implement them are big. But on that, very like quickly, as an almost separate subject, I'm way more confident nowadays, by the way, telling people that I interact with on a work basis that I need to be home to look after my kids. I used to lie.
Yes.
I used to lie. Yes. I used to say, I can't, I've got a meeting, or I've got a coaching call at 4, so I've got to be back. And it weren't true. I had to be back because I had to look after my kids.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? How we lie about that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not weird, I think. I mean, it is weird, but I can understand where it comes from because you're trying to build a business and you're so worried about other people's perceptions and whether that piece of business will go somewhere else or whether they think you're not as professional or as committed.
Yeah.
All that stuff goes through your head. And I think, if anything, the last 2 years has definitely opened up the conversation about, in a good way, about, you know, how we need to be more available as carers, parents, you know, supporters, like, and it's not even those who have children, just outside things that you need to do. And I'd say the fact that we're both more confident in what we do in the space, willing to not work with somebody if their ideals don't and values don't meet ours.
Yeah.
Not everyone gets that privilege.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Particularly if you work for somebody.
Yeah.
So you're really stuck in that sort of prison of either feeling like you have to sacrifice the stuff you need to do at home or you make up shit.
Yeah, well, I've worked with a couple of organisations recently where the brief has been, we've got parents here that are feeling guilty for going on the school run. And we want to, like, so I've done some boundaries work with them.
Yeah.
On, like, laying down, and I did this exercise where I got them to, like, write down a few of your rights. So write down some of your, like, Write down what motivates you, you know, like family, what are your kind of real passions, yeah? And then write down your rights. So it's my right to do the school run, or it's my right to make sure that, it's my right to turn my emails off after 6 o'clock and be with my kids. Mm. I saw a great meme as well, actually, literally this morning, randomly, coincidentally, that we're talking about this. I'm going to get this wrong, but it said something like, in terms of your kids, yeah, your kids would prefer 100% of 10% of your time than they would 10% of 100% of your time. Yeah. Time's the wrong word. Yeah, I think attention is probably a better word. Yeah. 100% of 10% of your attention rather than 10% of 100% of your attention. You see, I've probably said it wrong, but you see what I'm saying?
Everyone gets,
Like actually go and be as present as you can with them for 2 hours in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then when you're busy with work and that,
yeah,
you will be much less resentful and much less worried about it.
Yeah.
And that's been my experience as well.
It's really hard to do in the modern times though, isn't it? It's really hard to do. And I think you and I have talked about, you know, conversations where we said, oh, I need to make more time. And you said, bullshit, like you have the time.
Yeah.
You know, you're scrolling or you're pissing about wasting your time.
Yeah,
Or not wasting, but, you know, just not doing other stuff.
Yeah, well, it is wasting it in some ways.
Or not. You know, like sometimes I think the thing about social media or reading the newspaper or whatever it is for some people, that's just a way to break stuff up.
Yeah.
So it is about sacrifices and it is about choice and you're choosing to do that over something else. But I think the other thing is that people just need avenues to just do what they need to do. It, the reason social media works the way it does is because it serves people certain
of course
hits, right? So they're getting something from it.
Yeah for sure.
But if you look at it at a surface level, it's just mind numbing useless scrolling. But it is for the individual in that moment, they're hooked into something and it's giving them something, right?
And we said that thing though, didn't we? If you reflect on a day when you've said I can't go and do the school run, if your screen time during that day shows more than half an hour on social media,
you've made the choice.
I mean, it's more complex than that, right?
Yeah.
Because social media brings you in and all that kind of stuff. But like, you know, if I think I've said this before, if a really important client rang me up when I was working and took half an hour of my time, I'd find a way to deal with making up the lost work.
Yeah.
So I should be able to go, you know what, I'm sat in the office.
Yeah.
I'm going to put everything down. It takes me half an hour to go and get the kids from school. Yeah. I'm going to do that.
We have just, by not doing it, I think what we're saying is we've deprioritized it in the scheme of priorities that we have in our day.
Yeah.
And that's a hard truth, right?
Yeah. Because we want to be the good guy.
But also, I think you also just find yourself just being on a rat race and you've got to put these boulders.
Yeah.
You have to put hard boulders in
to
even get you to think in the right way, and then you take the action. You have to understand, you have to surface the problem, then take the action.
Yeah.
Too often we say, oh, look, just take the action. Just stop, just do a digital detox, or, you know, come off that or do screen time or whatever. So, yeah, I think that's...
But you also first have to get that level of honesty that we've just talked about, right? You have got time. If you've been on social media for 45 minutes, you had 45 minutes in the day, right? So there's changes that can be made. I read a book called Mistakes Were Made But Not By Us. And a lot of that talked about how we're sort of biologically wired to see ourselves in a good light, to see ourselves as the good guys. So we will often be like... No, I didn't, you know, in this instance, I didn't do the school run because I didn't have time. Like, I'm proper up against it. I'm mad busy, da, da, da. But actually, if you sit down and go, right, is this the truth? Is this really the truth? Or can I reflect and see what changes I can make?
Mm.
And look, that's what I teach on a resilience basis, on an emotional basis. Before you start pointing away, when you're triggered by something, have a look within and first just check all your ducks are in a row.
Yeah.
Check it's not something like that before you start pointing externally.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I am really conscious of is sometimes... it's really hard to go from being in your work identity straight into being parent identity.
Yeah.
Because it's full of responsibility.
Yeah.
And there's no like physical barrier, right? But it's basically to do it in a way that is energizing, you almost need to walk into it in the right way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what I tend to do is I work, and then like straight into it. And sometimes the energy of the children, they've been home from school for a little while. They're sort of now arguing with each other a little bit.
Doing
homework. It's like a, it's like an energy that you've just got to be able to just.
And then you're barking at them, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me introduce you to the mindful shower.
Come on.
When you finish work in the office at home, before you go out into the kitchen, or I always say kitchen because my kids are always sat at the table playing. Before you go out there, take an extra 10, 15 minutes and go and have a mindful shower. Get out of the clothes you're working in, shower, let the water hit your face and your head.
A real shower or a mindful shower?
No, it's a shower. It's a fucking real shower.
Oh, so you have a shower? Okay.
I'm not like close your eyes and imagine you're in a shower.
So hang on, are you actually taking a shower?
Is that what you're saying?
So every day when you finish work, you're saying, go and have a shower.
If you're working at home particularly.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not working at home, I would normally have a shower anyway, right? Because I've been out for the day. So I'm a bit of a shower freak. I will shower quite a lot. But yeah, I would say come out of the office before you go into inward kids, go take 10, 15 minutes, go shower. Yeah. If you're cold shower, that way inclined, do that. And then get into something different, more comfortable that you normally wear in a family environment. And then there's that separation. Because we used to use a commute, innit?
So I'm nodding along, but I know I'm not going to do that. And I think people will probably resonate with this. Like when your day is so crammed, just the thought of, like, it's not a 15-minute shower. You might have a 15-minute shower, then you get dressed, it's like half an hour or 20 minutes.
Not if you make the shower 5-10 minutes.
Okay.
You're too good for this. You're too good to say that you won't do that.
See, I'm putting the barriers up already.
Yeah, mate.
But I'm also curious. I think there's, wonder if there's a gateway to that, right? Like, I wonder if there is a way to do a mindfulness practice that just does the same thing, right? That basically. Yeah.
But in less time.
It's not even about time. I think it's just the barriers, right? But for me, the barriers are. End of the day, get the clothes, go have a shower, which is a bit weird, like having a shower. Like,
no, it's not. Why is it?
It's just a bit weird,
what,
you know.
Like,
Erin, I know you're struggling with the kids downstairs, but I'm just going to have a little, shower. Like, you know, it's just, I know you indulge yourself, Josh, but no, I'm being real here. I think even just transition is super important. I think what we're pointing to is transition. And different state. So for me, that might literally be the shutting down, a quick journal, a little mindfulness, all kind of at my desk space, but I really want to leave it where I go.
Okay, yeah.
And then head down.
You ain't going to do that either, though, are you?
I'm more likely to do that than go straight to the shower, but I might build up to the shower.
Maybe we should do an accountability.
I thought you were going to say, maybe we should have a shower together.
Based on that. My shower's too loud for that.
Oh, mate.
Maybe we should do an accountability piece around that.
Yeah.
Because I think it is massive, right? That transition between, and I think it's something that a lot of people experience. And then what happens is if you go in and start barking at the kids, you can the whole evening can be a write-off. This is
don't make your bad day your family's bad evening.
Yeah, exactly. But there's no way around it. There has to be some transition.
Yeah.
If yours is at the office because you fucking want to spend another 20 minutes in the office, then you do that, Hass, yeah? I'll be in the shower, clean, fresh, ready for the kids.
The kids are like all over the place and you're like, yeah, but I smell like brute. So
sometimes my youngest daughter comes in and sit my shower's in the bath and she will get undressed and she just sits in the end of the bath.
Yeah.
Like splashing about in all my dirty water.
Nice. My kids wouldn't be caught dead doing that, but they're a bit older now. Yeah. So no, look, I think transition is key.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's the point of it. So, all right, I'm going to move us on. I'm glad you mentioned a meme earlier. This is my segue to the meme.
Oh, nice segue.
Now, I want to call this the court of social media. What do you think I'm talking about?
The court of social media, you're talking about Amber Heard and... I was going to say Johnny Wilkinson.
That's a different story
altogether.
That's
a whole different... Yeah. Johnny Depp.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
And I think, so just for anyone that's been living under a rock, Amber Heard and Johnny Depp were going through a civil libel case.
He sued her, didn't he?
He sued her for defamation and he won.
Yeah.
And there are lots of people that were joyous at the fact that Johnny Depp won. And then there were lots of people that were really, really, really upset with the verdict. And I'm really keen to sort of dig into less about what happened in the case, but more about kind of
people's reaction to it.
People's reactions, but also how we got reaction from it, right? So basically, this is the first time I can remember where I've sort of really known, I've really like been watching what's been happening in a court case in this way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, I didn't watch any of the long form live recordings. What I saw, what I think basically the vast majority of the public saw,
was
were snippets, memes, commentaries of the day, and I was hooked. Like I wasn't originally, and then any time you're on Facebook or Instagram, like you'll just get like a, you know, a snippet, and you just get pulled in. And sometimes they're up to 2 minutes long, right? And and I would say if I did a percentage split of memes in favor of Depp versus in favor of Amber Heard, I'd say 95%, if not more.
In favor of Depp?
Yes.
Were they, yeah. Yeah.
What about you? Like, if you've seen any...
I'll be deadly honest with you. Because of some of my past life experiences, I've very purposely, not tried, I have very purposely...
Avoided.
Now, I have, because social media slams it in your face. So I've seen it. Stuff, and I've pondered on it.
Yeah.
And
of that, of those things you saw, percentage.
Yeah. Probably, I would say they were in favor of Depp. Yeah.
How much, roughly?
I'll be honest with you. LinkedIn kept showing me one particular person who I won't name, and she was fully in favor of Amber Heard. So, like, that's judging my. Not judging, that's like blurring my judgment.
Yeah, blurring your judgment. Okay, so the other thing is I didn't go out looking for it. The algorithms just loved it and just loved kind of pushing it. And then there were sort of memes and piss takes of certain things that Amber Heard said, but only portrayed Depp as this kind of cool guy. So I think it was very, very deliberate. This was kind of, you know... This was a case in favor of Johnny Depp. Now, through that, I think I built up an opinion of Amber Heard, and I think my personal view was a lot of what she was coming up with was lies.
Yeah.
That's my personal
view. I see a few memes that were like outward, you know, where she, where, you know, it wasn't, you weren't guessing that she was lying. She was caught out.
She was caught out lying.
Venomously lying.
Certainly kind of portrayed and got caught basically through the kind of the legal process. But I definitely only saw that because of what was going on in social media.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious about what your point of view on kind of this case is. A lot of commentators have said immediately on the day it happened, basically, that, you know, this has set women's rights back and women's safety rights back decades as a result. Personally, I disagree.
Mm.
And I also know that we'll be... probably accused of, you know, sitting with male privilege on that, and which I appreciate I acknowledge and accept. But I think it's also quite dangerous to say that it's set back, the women's safety, because it's very clear, as we said, from what we saw, that she was lying. And so I think, you know, the way that Amber Heard kind of, you know, pushed this agenda has also equally been detrimental to kind of, you know,
look, safety. Let me pick up on a couple of things that you said. The first thing about if it set women's rights back decades, that feels like a very social media comment, right?
Yeah.
I don't think you can put a time on how far back it has set it back. I don't think it's been a positive thing for women's rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think women, on the whole, away from that case, are labelled as crazy, way quicker than men are. Men can be crazy. You know, they can act crazy and they're just acting crazy, whereas a woman is a psycho very, very quickly, right?
Yeah.
So I think there is that aspect that this isn't going to help that. I don't think the case is going to help anyone's rights anywhere, right? I don't even, you know, I don't see why it should be played out in the public. I don't think anybody benefits from it. And I think it's really, really important to highlight the smear campaign as a form of abuse that it is. The smear campaign is the way that somebody who is abusive will continue to abuse somebody when they've had the power and the courage to break that abusive relationship. The smear campaign will be somebody, male, female, or any other gender, that will go to great lengths for years after they've split up with you to ensure that your reputation is tarnished, to ensure that your connections and your bonds and your relationships are at risk constantly through their smear campaign. So I don't think we should undervalue how bad that could have been for anybody, and in this case, Johnny Depp, right? So I think that's important to highlight. I just, where it becomes a bit muddy, this conversation, and a bit kind of complex to untangle, is I sort of look at it, I saw men celebrating online saying, you know, this is a victory for men, and men that are abused by women. I think there's possibly some truth in that, right? But I think it's too polarized to celebrate it in that way. I saw people, you know, saying things like it's going to put women's rights back thousands of years. Look, I think it it should highlight to us all how complex a thing abuse is. I think in many relationships become highly, highly toxic, where both are victims and both are
aggressors.
And actually, you don't need to pick one or the other.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it doesn't make any sense to bring gender into the conversation at all. Why I say it was muddy is because I do think there is a need, particularly for women, to separate women as a conversation against violence against women and have that as a separate conversation and actually bring the issue of gender into that, right? I'm just not sure whether it was right to bring it into this, the commentary of the Heard Depp conversation.
Yeah, I mean, really powerful. I think the thing around smear was, extremely powerful kind of to bring up. I think with regard to social media, do you think that regardless of whether we think she was lying or not, do you think Amber Heard had a fair trial as compared to any other citizen?
I don't know. I don't think it being played out on social media is going to help anybody have a fair trial in any instant.
Yeah.
So the answer to that would be no, it probably wouldn't be as fair. The problem is people see things, we forget that, our eyes are not just lenses, they're projectors, right? And if I was a female, had been in any abusive relationship, be it with a parent, a sibling, a family member, a wife, a partner, whatever, a wife, I would probably view that case through, here's another woman who's been abused and all, you know, she's having all of her reactions to that abuse just pulled apart and she's being made to look like she's a psycho, right? I can absolutely see how, if that's your experience, it's going to trigger the fuck out of you into that way, yeah? The reason I stayed away from it is because my experiences are of a woman who, particularly in my instance, used a smear campaign, and I know how much that hurts and how much that, and that's why I stayed away from it, because I knew I would become polarized when it triggered me online, and if I posted about it, I would lose compassion for the person that I've just talked about, the woman that sees it in that way, right? And actually, the truth is that neither of us are wrong. We're just seeing it based on our own experience, and if I was the woman that I just talked about, I would see it in the way that she's seen it, but I'm not, so I see it in my way, and so without us sitting in that courtroom and pulling apart all of the details, we actually can't, it would be wrong of us to come to anything unless we say we trust the arm of the law and that's the truth and that's what we have to go with.
Is it the process? And what they might argue is that the process was, the jurors, they go home, they see this stuff, they talk to friends and family, there is no way. But then maybe there needs to be an acknowledgement of the fact that we don't live in a place where you can just say, don't read the newspaper, don't watch the TV for the length of the trial.
Yeah, but there could be an acknowledgement, just don't take a camera in there. Why has it got to be filmed?
I have no idea. Yeah.
That's where you could stop it. Yeah. It could be, no, it's for the jury.
Yeah.
And if you really want to film it and play it out, let the jury do it and then everyone can watch the highlights. Or you don't have to, don't watch it. Why does it have to be filmed? We don't do it in England, do we?
No. Nah.
You just get those crappy drawings.
Yeah.
They're not crappy. They're very good.
They're very, very talented. But I do think, you know, it's an important conversation to have. And I just want to kind of acknowledge that even just bringing it up and having a point of view makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because and not because I'm afraid to say what I think, but more because I'm afraid to think about kind of the impact on other people who are going through it and seeing it, but also just, I guess, you know, the bit I don't see, which is just like my privilege, you know. Mm. And but I just feel like there is something brewing around what happens with, you talk about the is it the madness of crowds or the maddening of crowds?
Yeah.
And it feels like that happened here to some degree. Now, a lot of people feel it landed on the right side based on the kind of the evidence and what came out. And I think there's probably an acknowledgement of this smear campaign that went on. And so there's a sort of a justness that feels like certain people have felt. But I think the madness of crowds, it could have tipped the other way. Like, it could have been that actually the social media frenzy could have been pointing away from Depp and towards Heard. Mm. And that might have had an impact on what happened. So unless you were sitting there and heard everything, you'll never know. And it's just it's a kind of a dangerous zone of life that we're in where it can play such a disproportionate, you know, influence.
And you're almost expected to have an opinion on it, which is like, really, when you break it down, it's bizarre. I mean, if you were going through that experience, right?
Yeah.
I would want to know about it. I'd try and formulate an opinion because I'd feel like I'd want to be with you and help you and trying to understand what's going on. If it was somebody within my community, then I might feel like an obligation. But this is two people in America whose job just happens to be one that makes everybody kind of know who they are. And like, why should we have we shouldn't have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
It's bizarre that we now live in a sort of, you know, reminds me when Piers Morgan says, grow up and have a bloody opinion on something. And you think, I don't need an opinion on it. But through what I've seen, I also recognize I have an opinion on it.
Mm.
But my opinion is based on my experience. It's not based on fact. It's based on my experience.
But it's also, you've choicefully decided to withdraw from conversations. I think that's the thing that we talked about in our last episode, right? Which is, go where you want to go, stay away from the rest.
Yeah.
I think that's more, we have to be more and more conscious of that as we live in this current society of always on and always being bombarded with information. You just have to be really choiceful in where you go and where you participate.
And you have to be aware of what triggers you and what you're reacting to. So some of the posts triggered me, yeah? Some of the things, when I say triggered me, it made me, this is what triggered looks like in very basic forms for me. I'd see a post and I'd start typing straight away and out, you know, a reply, and I am thinking, I, one, want to make this person look stupid. I'm, two, want to make sure that they've got no comeback. And three, want to make myself look good. Because I'm triggered.
Yeah.
Right? Now, what we do is we hide that trigger behind righteousness, right? This isn't me acting on a trigger. I'm right. And I'm doing this for the good of the people because I'm one of the good guys. When actually, with my triggers, I need to go, right, hang on a minute. What's going on here? I'm angry and I want to react straight away. Right? That's a clear sign something's happening. So let's go away. Let me pull myself away from this for a minute and then, you know, go and do X, Y, and Z and see if I still want to come back and reply later, yeah? And what you find is, like, I'm triggered by this because of my own personal experience. And do I want to get into a debate with somebody who's triggered by their personal experience? Mm. If I want to, then it needs to be one where I go, let me come in and listen to your experience and try and understand why you're seeing it in that way and know that I may never see it in that way.
Yeah.
And here's the way that I see it. But that's not what social media does.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really hard to get to that place where you can, unless you really mindfully do it, where you can get to a place where you can appreciate where they're coming from, particularly if you're in very polarizing kind of points of view.
Yeah. And look, I've just had it with that post that I've done on Instagram. I get so many, and I recognize on that, there's like, I don't know, 5,000 comments on one video. right? And you're getting all these good ones coming in. And at the beginning, I'm just like, these people are saying, you know, it's such a good thing. It's helped me. And I'm responding. And then I'm like, I haven't got time to respond to everyone now. So I'm going to leave it, right? Because it's too overwhelming. And then boom, a bad comment comes in. All of a sudden, I've got time, yeah?
Yeah.
And like, but then you see some of them, and this is a problem with social media. On social media, if I say I like the color red, somebody will hear that I've said, you're a dick because you like the color blue. So yeah. They'll come in and they'll be like, what the fucking blue's a good color? And I'll be like, yeah, all right. I just said I like red. Yeah, but I fuck it. And then they start arguing about how good blue is. And you think, but then if it triggers me back, then I start going, well, fucking blue is shit. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. And then you get in this, you're in this debate and you think, I only said my original point was just that I like red.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's what happens online.
Yeah. I mean, for the vast majority of us, we don't, you know, we don't have to get involved in that sort of social media tangling, right? But an influencer like you, Josh, I'm sure it's like, you know,
it's hard, mate. Tell you, the way that it particularly the way the bad comments
land, in,
the way they land, yeah, not just the ones, you know, ones that disagree will trigger me, right? And that's, you know, not it shouldn't trigger me, but it does. But when people start attacking your character or attacking you, it's hard.
Like, what kind of mother did you have that raised such a poor, you know, scum of society?
Yeah, yeah, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, or the more subtle. I'm surprised somebody like you, operating in the space that you are, has this kind of opinion. And you want to say, fuck off. I'm swearing a lot at the moment, aren't I?
That's okay. You're in high energy mode, aren't you?
I'm in high energy mode.
This is what good energy
mixed
is.
Mixed with a bit of heaviness. This is what happens, Haz.
No, I think, you know, I think if we can take anything away from it, it is understanding how we connect to what's going on. When we're triggered, what happens, right?
Yeah.
And how to deal with it. And acknowledging. I often do find that I will... get that with emails, actually, or you know, I want to immediately respond in a spiky, pointy way, or if somebody has lacked a bit of respect and just made an assumption about, you know, just I guess your availability or something like that, without you know,
yeah.
Just those things, it just kind of just triggers me, and I just have to pull myself back. I definitely do find myself starting to write emails responses, and I just sort of hold back. I want to move us away from this topic, actually, and move.
Good, I'll take some breaths.
Yeah. Give us a break, Josh. So basically, where I want to go is there is a looming narrative that there is a global recession on its way. Okay, and we're certainly feeling it in the UK. There's a report recently that came out, read on the BBC, that 1 in 6 households is going to a food bank, which is crazy.
That is mental.
Yeah,
it's absolutely mental.
Crazy.
Yeah.
The war in Ukraine, the kind of China being in lockdown, supply chain issues, it's all kind of leading
to... Are they
in
lockdown again, are they?
Well, just still. As a preventative. Yeah, preventative, because they're really worried about kind of a major outbreak hitting the country. So they're like, in certain parts of the country, it's like... You know, if someone has it in a region, there's like major lockdown. But that's stifling their growth, and therefore that's obviously going to have, given the size of its economy, it's going to have a major impact on the global economy. So what we've got is rising inflation and really slow growth. So there is a prediction that there's going to be a significant recession that's going to kind of impact us globally. We've got the winter coming up in the UK, so fuel prices are going to go up. They reckon petrol is going to be £2 per litre by the end of the summer.
That's mental. Isn't it?
And for people that have to drive, care workers, people, you know, that is, there are a lot of people that are leaving their jobs, or, you know, just because they can't afford to pay the fuel. So, you know, I wanted to set a lovely rosy context.
Yeah.
But the last time we had something that impacted our economy so significantly was lockdown, right? And it's probably going to be over a longer period worse, right, than that. But there were many people that were caught, you know, unawares. They lost their jobs, and they might have been, you know, they might have had a craft or a trade that they had done their whole life, and then basically the economy, their own economy, was pulled from under them, and you had a lot of people that that moved into poverty. So where I want to go actually is, with that happening, I want to talk a bit about how you can take some control back in an out of control situation, because too many people just probably felt lost and powerless and didn't know what to do. I know, for example, that my brother-in-law, he's a chef and he worked in the hospitality industry, which was incredibly wounded by lockdown. He worked for a one restaurant for 14 years and he was just let go. He was the highest paid, you know, he was the executive chef. He was let go. And
it's mad.
And then there were no other chefs being hired during that time. Mm-hmm. And thankfully he's, you know, he's back and he's working and he's happy. But there was a period where he would have tried anything, you know, just to provide for his family. And it got down to a point where he had to try and do Amazon deliveries. And it was just such a horrible experience that, you know, we as a family, we said, no, that we'll find another way. But not everyone can do that. And so, you know, with this happening, you know, this is going to come. So what I wanted to talk about was, how do people take a bit of control? And you know, we've both been through a situation where we've built something from nothing, seemingly. And I just wanted your point of view first, but then I wanted to talk a bit about what steps that, you know, people might begin to be able to take to even explore this area.
I guess the kind of thing to start by saying, which you've just alluded to, is this: it's a bit of a disgrace really that we're here. Right. And I think the fact that we have to now, you know, we're all going to have to kind of, what was everybody saying at the start of lockdown?
Level up, tough it out or something like that.
No, that's what the government was saying, because they knew it.
Oh, we were saying, as in people were saying.
Can you remember the word was, not adjust, it was...
can't remember.
Oh, but there's going to be a little bit of that that's going to have to go on, right? And I just think it's just so bad that we live in a democracy where... you know, the fifth richest one and one in six. You see loads of these politicians on Twitter taking photos of themselves at the food bank. Fucking makes me so angry, man. Do you know what I mean? That, like, I just think, I don't know, man, it's so out of touch. But in terms of like the adjustments that you can make, look, I guess there's a lot to learn from what we've been able to do, isn't there? I particularly think that I used to believe that some people were just... I thought that people that were successful financially or in any kind of working business were lucky. Like, I really did just think they were just lucky. Like, I look at my brother-in-law, for example, who has done really well in his life, and I used to just believe that he sort of found himself in that position. And it's not true.
Yeah.
And I've learned, you know, that... if you have a passion, there are ways. If you're able to try and make those changes and be fearless being not being scared, but being scared and just doing it anyway, which is what I did, then you can make huge changes, right? And you can find new ways to change your life financially as well.
Yeah. And I just want to be clear, you don't always have to have a deep passion. You could actually just be really good at something.
Yeah.
And then there could be a need, and then you can probably find a way. So I want to talk about Ikigai, because we've both been through the journey of Ikigai, and we use it a lot in our work. And I know you've talked about it in terms of it being an important part of your journey, as well as the Mavericks Unlimited Switch course. Ikigai. So let's talk about, like, what's your understanding? What did you get from the Ikigai? Let's talk about what Ikigai is first.
Yeah, as a word, it's one that you have to start writing into Google before you ever try and type to somebody that they need to be able to do it, because I can never remember how to spell it.
Ikigai. So Ikigai is a Japanese philosophy. It's a way of life, and it doesn't have a Western translation, but it roughly means reason for being. So it's a rite of passage that, you know, Japanese people go through to kind of understand what their purpose is, what their reason for being is. And what the Japanese people look at is what I'm good at and what I love, and the intersection of those is known to be their Ikigai. The development of that is what a lot of people have seen online and through their research, is actually a four circle model, which is the one that we use, which I really like, which is the intersection of what I love, mm-hmm. so what I'm deeply passionate about, what I'm good at, my strengths, my skill areas. But then the other two are also what the world needs. So identifying the problems that the world has or the opportunities that need to be gone after and what I can be rewarded for. Mm. So, you know, how you can earn or how you can be recognized and where those come into the, where they meet in the center, that's Ikigai.
Yeah.
And so it's not a straightforward process, but it can be a fun and creative process. And we take a lot of our clients through it. And, you know, I've had conversations with you about it and other clients, and we just, it's a way to explore and get behind and beyond some of the things that you put at the surface. So for many people, they just adopt this work identity from a very young age, mm. right? So they might be in banking, or they might start an apprenticeship, they might start as a mechanic, they might start as a baker, and that's it. Yeah. And that's their identity. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, because if you say at 45 years, 50 years, or if all you've ever known is being somebody that, you know, is a baker, and then suddenly that job doesn't go or that industry doesn't exist anymore, what do you do? Well, actually, this really helps you get back mm. to the things that you could potentially kind of earn a living from. So, why I think it's important to look at Ikigai is because you don't have to have all of those circles perfect to be able to make meaning of it. Mm. You like I said, you could be good at something, and if the world needs it, then you can probably be rewarded for it. Mm. You can be deeply passionate about something. You may not be that good at it yet, but if the world needs it, then you can probably learn the skills and become good. So if you love photography, you could, but not necessarily that good at it, you could get good at it, but, and then find something that the world needs around it.
Yeah.
And then you could find a way to do it. And I find that the best way to do Ikigai is not to try and do the whole thing all at once, but actually break it down into its small parts.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell me about like your experience of it and what you think is, how you think it could be useful.
Look, I think when I first did it, it was like massive realizations for me, really, because you look at what I do now. I just didn't put two and two together. Like, for example, that I'm good at articulating certain things, right? So is the word articulation, is that what I'd say?
Yeah.
So articulation was one of the things that for me in the end has fallen into pretty much every category, right? And the fact that it falls into the what you can get rewarded for, I never would have seen it, because I met you, right? However many years ago it was, that we went to the Tate Modern, yeah?
Yeah.
And I remember doing the work with you and doing it, and like you were writing it down. Although I don't think it was presented fully as Ikigai at that point. That's what we were doing, yeah. Right? And then I went on to learn about it. And I remember saying stuff like, you know, I'm quite good at talking, or like quite good at being with people. And then you being able to branch that and looking at the categories and saying, well, the world needs that. Like, it's just weird that I hadn't spotted or noticed or resonated with that until we'd done it into the four categories. And then it was like, wow, this like really, there really is something here.
Yeah. I think the thing that people often forget about is we actually acquire deep knowledge, expertise, and also desires like to kind of do certain things over time, but because we're just so busy, so focused, and so kind of, you know, living at the pace of where we are right now, we don't think that there's kind of possibility beyond that. So I've worked with people who have completely changed their profession, and there's risk associated, and not everyone, by the way, that does Ikigai has to go and start their own business.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to do in bringing this conversation here today and starting this conversation, because we're going to keep talking about this, we said a little bit, is to help people understand that there is stuff that they can start to do, start to explore, even if it's a small thing that you start to do as well as whatever work you're doing today.
Yeah,
it creates opportunities for you. And of course, down the line, if it feels like it could turn into something, there's a notion of something called a side hustle, which is where you start something whilst you're doing your main thing. And at some point, the side thing may turn into a bigger thing, and that could become something, you know, even bigger. Or it doesn't. But actually, what you're doing is you're just creating opportunity. If, you know, something really unfortunate happened to somebody mm. and they lost their job, even just the knowledge that there's more possibility out there actually renews their confidence in themselves, whereas often people just feel like they're starting from nowhere.
Yeah, And we're not given that message, right? When you're at school, you sort of maths, English, science, geography, and it's what do you want to be when you're older?
Yeah.
And that question is actually normally presented as,
yeah,
who do you want to work for when you're older?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You're never really told, you know, you can carve out, especially in today's world with the internet, right? We live in a world now where you can go and set up your own website in your bedroom, start gathering momentum and a following online, right? Anybody can do that. Right, or it's there for anybody to do if they can do it. So you really can be the master of your own, and that's your own destiny without sounding too cheesy. And that's what I often tell people, you know, with the power of like social media now, is to like start. You know, I did that post actually recently on LinkedIn, right, a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
Of that video of me behind a skip.
Yep.
Freedom Fridays, remember that?
Oh, Freedom Fridays.
I used to go Freedom Friday, and I would come up with some little like, and I was making videos and. Nobody was watching them.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And but I was doing them, putting them out, and I was finding my voice, and yeah. I was like, it was a side hustle. I was doing it on my lunch break at work, right? Yeah. And it was a side hustle that, you know, I very clearly wanted it to become something, but at the time it was nothing. And you know, it was, you know, almost incomprehensible that the boy that was putting on videos on Facebook for people that I used to go to school with, I was getting, you know, if I got 100, it was like I just got 100 views on a video.
Yeah.
To where I am now.
Yeah.
With content that, you know,
yeah,
is seen by millions all the time.
And a lot of people might listen to you and go, oh, but you're Josh, right?
Yeah.
You have to start from somewhere. And I whenever I coach friends or people around a job change, sometimes it's involuntary, sometimes they're choosing to leave, and they go, I need to get my CV done. I said, CV is almost one of the last things that you do.
Yeah.
Because the CV will be the articulation of where you want to go.
Yeah.
It's always just where I've been, and it's really boring. So, but if you are able to be really clear about your narrative, the CV is literally just a piece of paper that people can just pick up from LinkedIn anyway.
Yeah. Now. Never written a CV.
And it shows. but you know, but the point is, you got to do the understanding first.
Yeah.
For some people, they'll get inspired by the fact that you used to stand in front of a skip, do Freedom Fridays, and now where you are today. For other people, it doesn't need to be that big.
It just needs to be a little bit of
like, what can I explore? So what I want to do is I'll put together a little kind of one pager that I'll share as a link on our website on our channels, you know, when we post this podcast, so people can understand it and start to think about how to do
and have a look at it. Yeah. I'll tell you a really good example. I won't say his name just in case he don't want me to.
Yeah.
But he's top bloke. He's done InnerU, comes to Uncommon Man regularly. He's just started this online drumming group. So he's like a really good drummer. Yeah, and he does one-to-one drumming sessions, but he's just started now and putting content out. And he was at Uncommon Man last week, and I was like, mate, just stick with it. I was like, how's it going? And he's like, slower than I'd hoped, but it's moving. And I was like, yeah, mate, stick with it. 3 years I was making videos to absolutely nobody. And he was like, ah. And I was like, mate, that was supposed to like energize you, not make you think 3 years.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
And I look at it and the content that he's putting out, and I'm thinking to myself, if I was looking to do the drums, a drumming group and that, I'd think, do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to become this big
and it doesn't even
global
have to be like,
drumming group.
And it also doesn't have to be content driven. Like,
no, exactly.
You know,
yeah, like, that's just my space.
Yeah, no, for sure. Mate, great conversation. I've sort of made a commitment without even asking you that I want to keep this conversation alive just to help people to explore what we know about life and what you know, what we do in our work, and actually just bring a bit of that into this space as well. So we started today with purpose and Ikigai, but I want to get a bit more tactical as well, like show how you've grown your followers and your social media and your kind of marketing, because I think, you know, there's so much to be learned from what you do. But I'm going to move us on today onto reasons to be cheerful.
Oh, shit.
Just of time. Josh, over to you. What's your reason to be
cheerful? You go first.
My reason to be cheerful this week is just, I know it's really cliche and been often repeated, but I've really just enjoyed the last 2 days with my loved ones, and I'm just gonna say that it has, for various reasons over the last week, it has become apparent to me how I have personally put the business as kind of the number one priority, because I feel so much responsibility for myself, for my family that I'm talking about, but also my extended kind of network. And I don't think that's wrong, but I think it can be an and, not an or. And I've just done it as an or. And so for me, just being with them has really just re-energized and rejuvenated kind of my desire to get that balance much, 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 much more aligned with each other. But in the beginning, it's going to require me to prioritize my family a bit more. So yeah, that's my reason to be choosing.
Love it, mate. I love it. And it's way better than the one that I'm going to bring. But the one that I am going to bring is the way that, you know, things are sort of aligning in my work now, you know, and what people won't see, or that perhaps they will have seen, because I'm sort of content driven in what I do, but is how often I failed at what I'm doing now. And when I say failed, did stuff and it just didn't work. It didn't take off, didn't go where it needed to go. You know what I mean? I always bring up, I did that event. I can talk openly about it now. I've probably got enough strength to talk about it. I went to do an event a few years back in Swindon, and it was way before I was ready.
You talked about that last time. Yeah.
Did I? Yeah. So to just be where I am now, and things are really aligning, and it's changing my life quite dramatically in a number of different ways. So yeah, that's my reasons to be cheerful.
Brilliant.
Today.
Well, what the listeners don't know is we're about to go and eat a meal on Josh, because he lost the fantasy football. I know we haven't talked about fantasy football for a while, but that's what's about to happen next. So that should have been my reason to be cheerful.
Thanks, Hass. Really enjoyed this. Goodbye. Thanks again for listening to 115 Miles with Josh Connolly and Hassan Kyle.